currently listening to Evan Rhodes with the tune Shiloh's Song from Magnetic. Bubble Bad before this with Rasket Briller. Also Ransel with Love Is In The Air. That's about it for me for today. You've been listening to Couch Dancing on WRCT Pittsburgh. I'm DJ Firefly. Feel free to check out my website at djfirefly.com. It's the best way to get in touch with me. And I have some of my old shows posted up there if you missed something. And I should be back next week with another show.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you the best music.
Continuing tragic saga, in a sense, that is Rudy Giuliani's complete implosion of his political and professional career continues. Rudy Giuliani is now suing President Joe Biden for calling him a Russian pawn. There's a CNN report about this. Former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani filed a defamation lawsuit against Biden for calling him a Russian pawn. During a presidential debate nearly 3 years ago, Giuliani announced the lawsuit at a rambling press conference outside a courthouse in New Hampshire, where he filed in order to take advantage of the state's defamation laws. He reiterated several attacks against Biden and his son Hunter, though he's only suing Joe Biden, despite the high bar for statements by public figures in a political setting to be found defamatory. So calling this a rambling press conference is an understatement. Understand that even conceptually, as we've talked about before, when you're talking about defamation, generally, it can be different depending on the state. But generally, you need to demonstrate a number of elements. One, that the statements that were made were untrue. Two, that they were made in a public setting and communicated to a third party. And three, that they actually damaged your reputation or career or life materially. It's very difficult to imagine that Joe Biden's comments about Rudy 3 years ago could be demonstrated to have materially harmed Rudy, particularly when he did so many things to harm himself. But regardless, here's Rudy Giuliani, sort of confused, you know, explaining, I guess, what he's doing.
Thank you, Lou. Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Bill, very, very much. He's our counsel in the state of New Hampshire. And Lou is my counsel overall, because there are going to be a lot of implications from this case. As you can tell, it has a great deal of room for expansion, because a lot of people helped Joe Biden with this terrible lie that he told. Joe Biden has spent his life telling lies, getting away with it. Now he gets away with it because you let him get away with it. You foisted it on us, I mean, the press. An American president who is a pathological liar. That has implications for national security. As a result of Joe Biden's lies, people have died.
I don't know what he's talking about there.
Would there be a war in Ukraine if Donald Trump were president? Absolutely.
By the way, what this has to do with defamatory alleged statements against Rudy, obviously we're already off track.
Putin invaded Ukraine and Georgia three times. One time with Biden, one time with Obama, one time with Bush. Only time he didn't, Trump was the president. Afghanistan. So in some ways, the damage done to me is less severe. He didn't get me killed, although there have been death threats.
Right.
His lies cost me a good deal of my law practice.
Now, remember, what caused this is, you know, they claim to be the party of personal responsibility. What cost Rudy? That's actually not bad. He did loot. What cost Rudy much of his law practice was that he pursued obviously ridiculous claims about the 2020 election in court, associated himself with people like Sidney Powell and Jenna Ellis, humiliated himself in an incredible manner day after day after day. That's why he lost a bunch of the law practice, not because of Joe Biden and whatever Biden said in a debate years ago.
It cost me directly a good deal of my million person audience on Common Sense, where I was cut off by YouTube, which operates as a co-conspirator in another conspiracy of Biden's.
All right. So this is 16 minutes long. As you can see, this is only even tangentially related to the claims of defamation. The one other interesting moment I did want to zoom in on is Rudy Giuliani angrily denies his alcoholism here. And, you know, the alcoholism stuff, we're talking about a disease. We're not making fun of anybody's alcoholism. And oftentimes people who are alcoholics deny it. It's relatively well sourced that when Trump was still in office and Rudy was his attorney, there was an effort made to put Rudy on TV in the morning rather than at night, because it was less likely that Rudy would have been drinking in the morning. And often the nighttime appearances, the 8, 9, 10 p.m. appearances on Fox News would happen after Rudy went out to dinner and had too much to drink. So it's quite well sourced. But here is Rudy angrily denying it.
Thank you, everybody.
It's a typical New York Times malicious lie. I do not have an alcohol problem. I have never had an alcohol problem. And the reason I told you what I achieved is nobody could have achieved that if they did. When the hell was I drinking? I was working 24 hours a day. It's a big damn lie by a newspaper that's a disgrace, and by a reporter who covered me, used to cover me very, very.
Now, whoever is to Rudy's right tries to rap because this is going off the rails, and Rudy says it's my press conference.
In a very glowing way, and now is vicious and mean in what she does.
Thank you.
And it's my press conference.
What a mess.
Vicious and mean. And if it weren't for the protections that the press gets with Times Against Sullivan, I mean, she should be sued for libel. She should also be thrown out of the profession for being a damn liar.
Right.
That's okay.
All right. So Rudy denies the alcoholism. I mean, listen, it's quite well sourced. Alcoholism is a disease, and it's a very sad state of affairs. My prediction, Rudy doesn't get even a single dollar in damages from this entire farce. A legal expert believes it is likely that at the conclusion of this entire fraud trial against the failed former president Donald Trump, who is a civilly liable rapist that has been indicted criminally four times, that Trump's properties are going to be auctioned off. This is a very interesting take. Newsweek reports, attorney says Donald Trump's properties will likely be auctioned off. New York's former assistant attorney general has said that Trump's properties will likely be liquidated and sold off at auction after a judge found he committed fraud. This would be an incredible end to some of these business endeavors. The article continues, Tristan Snell was speaking after a court found that the former president massively inflated the value of some properties and ordered that some Trump companies involved be stripped of their corporate licenses. It's one part of Trump's ongoing civil fraud trial. Snell said to MSNBC, quote, "The worst outcome that could have come from this case has already been handed down, and that is for the corporate licenses to be canceled. The properties are likely going to be liquidated. The properties are probably going to be sold at auction. That's probably what is going to happen. We don't know that for sure, but that is probably where this is headed." So Trump is already really, really in trouble. Snell said it's also important to remember Trump already lost, despite his protestations of innocence. Judge Arthur Engoron ruled last week that Trump, his adult sons, the Trump Org, and other businesses associated with Trump overvalued several properties, including Mar-a-Lago and Trump's triplex. I heard someone call it a triplex. I always thought it was triplex in Manhattan at Trump Tower for financial gain. Well, listen, you know, Trump is insisting over the last week, Trump has insisted that Mar-a-Lago is worth $500 million, $1 billion, $1.5 billion. And most recently, he said it's worth 100 times the $18 million, meaning $1.8 billion. We may soon find out, at least at rock bottom auction pricing, what Mar-a-Lago is actually worth. Now, I think there are a couple important things to say here. The individual making this prediction about Trump's properties being auctioned off has nothing to do with this trial whatsoever. And it is merely a hypothetical. I think it is likely that this will happen. Is it actually going to happen, or will it be prescribed, but then it will be negotiated to something else? What if we transfer ownership to other individuals I designate other than Eric and Don Jr., who I believe are the other defendants in this lawsuit? It's completely plausible that Trump would be ordered to auction these off, but then there would be some kind of negotiation that goes in a different direction. The big takeaway from all of this that we are all coming away with, if we're paying attention, is that getting involved in politics, winning the presidential election in 2016, and then unleashing every worst business instinct that Trump had for decades onto the political world, where people are paying much more attention, was probably the worst decision Trump made in his life. The worst personal decision and the worst business decision, and probably the worst family decision as well, if the reporting about what's going on with he and his wife is to be believed. And our instinct that that may have been the case started to build in 2017, in 2018, and so on. And it has only grown since then. I'm currently reading Selwyn Rabb's 800-page epic about the five families, the five mafia families from Italy that became the prominent families in the New York mafia. And one of the things that you see is that the more successful mafiosi fly below the radar. They don't try to get in the spotlight. They don't try to show up and testify anywhere. They don't scream in media. They want to be as quiet as possible. And it seems as though Trump did the opposite by becoming president of the United States. Couldn't happen to a nicer guy. The David Pakman Show continues to be supported primarily by our viewers, our listeners, people who say, hey, I like this. I'm going to do a little bit to support independent progressive media. The best way to do this is to sign up at joinpakman.com. It's quick, it's easy, it's cheap, and it will become slightly less cheap when we launch the new website and issue our first membership price increase in over a decade in something like 4 to 6 weeks. So go to joinpakman.com, subscribe, and you can use the coupon code 4 years 4 indictments to save roughly 50%, I think it is. All right, let's hear from some people in the audience. We take calls on the Friday show via Discord at davidpakman.com/discord. We're going to hear from some people now. Remember, nicknames and cutesy things aren't going to get you called on. If you want to get called on, you should have name and location, or location and name, in the format of, for example, Jeff from Minnesota. Jeff from Minnesota is our first caller today. Jeff, welcome to the program. What's on your mind today?
David, thank you for having me. I love your show.
My pleasure. Thank you.
So obviously you're no stranger to kind of the cognitive dissonance that takes place within the Republican Party, specifically within MAGA.
Right.
So I guess my question for you is, how do we kind of break through to that? You know, I'm convinced this is something that's going to take at least like a decade to kind of get past. What do you think?
Well, I think in the best case scenario, it will take 8 to 10 years. I think worst case, it basically becomes the Republican Party indefinitely. I never say forever, because you know nothing's forever, but indefinitely. And I think a lot of it is going to have to do with what happens over the next, 13 months until the election, 15 months until the next inauguration. If Trump wins, into that next Trump term. I don't think there's a clear answer yet as to how much life this movement has in it, but it has absolutely destroyed the Republican Party. And now it is so abundantly clear. 2018 did not go well in the midterms. 2020, Trump lost the general election. 2022 was going to be a red wave. barely took the House and actually fell further behind in the Senate. Now they've ousted their own Republican speaker because of eight MAGA extremists. I mean, this movement has objectively been a disaster for the Republican Party. I don't know how long it'll last, but I think your instinct that we could be talking about another 10 years is certainly possible.
Of course. And, you know, when you're debating MAGA people, that's, you know, that's an effective tool because you can just make them look like the delusional morons that they are. But when you're talking to someone in real life, someone who you know personally, it gets a little bit harder because if you try to bring up exactly what you brought up, all they think is that you're some part of some like big giant lie. And that just pushes them farther and farther down the rabbit hole.
Without a doubt. It's one of these circumstances where the mechanisms through which we might hope to change people will often only further ingrain them in their beliefs. And so, as we've talked about before, we're basically talking about deprogramming cult members at this point. And this is a difficult thing to do.
Right. You know, you got to hate the cult, love the cultist.
Hate the cult, love the cultist. Yes. I mean, you show empathy to the cultist. You welcome them back to reality if they show any willingness to come back. I agree with that completely, Jeff.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I got to give credit where it's due. I 100% stole that notion from Bill Maher.
Oh, okay. Interesting. I haven't heard him say that, but it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I'm not super on board with the fact that he thinks Biden cannot win the next election, but, you know,
yeah, it's like, what does that even mean? What does it mean he can't win? You know, there were so many people saying in 2020, Biden can't win. There were Bernie people going, Biden cannot win. Well, of course, he can win. Trump could win. Biden can win. What does that even mean? It's a very strange thing to say. He might not win, but that doesn't mean he can't win.
Absolutely.
All right, Jeff, I'm getting all wound up, so I'm going to let you go. Okay.
Absolutely. Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. Jeff from Minnesota. Great to hear from you. Let's go to Pam from Florida. Pam, welcome to the program. What's on your mind today? I'm curious. Oh, Pam, please.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. So just to piggyback on that, I didn't get to see the whole interview with Cenk from Young Turks and You. But I have to say, Cenk, Anna, and you are my three favorite media, progressive media people, and love to see you guys talking and debating. But to say he is pretty strongly in opinion that Biden has a really hard chance of winning, even against Trump. And I didn't get to, like I said, I didn't see the whole full interview. So I want to hear your kind of opinion on that.
Well,
because
listen,
he's pretty strong based on numbers and his percentages.
Here's the deal. Couple different things. First of all, a lot of the same people saying Biden can't win said it in 2020 and they were wrong. So by very definitionally, what is it that they're saying? They're saying, I don't think Biden will win, but obviously Biden could win. First, there's the polling question. You look at polling. I mean, listen, the latest poll out right now has Biden and Trump tied 43-43. That means 14% of the electorate is still up for grabs. That very much means Biden can win and Trump can win. You look at other polling where Trump's a little bit ahead or whatever the case may be. It's such an early stage that it's very difficult for me to say the polling story is written in stone. Secondly, Biden won in 2020. Now, yes, it was very thin margins in a few states. But if we start with 2020 as the map and we say, has Biden gained or lost ground at the state level? In Georgia, I don't think Georgia's gone further to the right since Biden won it in 2020. I don't think Pennsylvania's gone further to the right. I don't think Arizona's gone further to the right. So you actually see, hey, Trump needs to take some states from Biden. And it's not obvious that he's going to be able to do that. He might, but he might not. And then you get to the age question, which is so many people are concerned about Biden's age. Many of the people in polls who are concerned about Biden's age are still going to vote for him if it's Biden versus Trump. And so I think we need to be very careful when I'm not saying Biden will win. I'm just reacting to people who say he can't. When we hear things like 2/3 of Democrats think Biden's too old. Most of those people will still vote for him if it's Biden versus Trump, because they recognize that Trump's an insane authoritarian autocrat. So I think we just have to be really clear about what we're saying, what we mean, and what is in the data right now.
Right. And I guess what worries me, too, is just the fact that so many people came out in such large numbers just to really vote against Trump, not vote for Biden. And they voted for Biden, obviously.
Yes.
I just don't want to see them sleep on this. And it's just like so obvious to me what a danger, authoritarian nightmare Trump will be in office. I can't understand how people don't see that in every, you know, and last but not least.
And Pam, this is underrepresented in the polls in the sense that if Trump becomes the nominee, that is going to motivate a large number of Democratic voters who are going to say, I need to get involved to prevent a Trump presidency. Again, none of this is proof that Biden will or won't win. But right now, the polling doesn't consider the number of people who will get involved to prevent the disaster of Trump from becoming president.
Right. Jen's flirting with possibly running. In a primary. What would you say to that?
I don't believe Cenk's eligible to run because he was born in Turkey.
Okay.
I don't even get what that's about. This is the first time hearing of that. I don't get how that could possibly work.
Okay. All right. Anyway, thank you so much. I love your show. Love you. Take care.
All right, Pam, great to hear from you. Always great to hear from Pam from Florida. Let's go next to Armin from Los Angeles, California. Armin, welcome to the program. What's on your mind today? What can I do for you? Armin, please welcome.
Hi, David. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hey, I wasn't really expecting you to take my call, but thank you. I left a comment maybe like last week about what was going down in Armenia and Artsakh and ethnic cleansing going on down there. And I just kind of wanted you to speak on it if you did do some research on it.
You know, I just, on these issues, I don't know that I'm the right person to really opine because it's not my area of expertise. I'm aware of what's going on. There's been this enclave, Nagorno-Karabakh, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, which has been completely emptied after an entire ethnic Armenian population is fleeing. It is indeed being called an ethnic cleansing. It seems to me like it is an accurate term. Obviously I'm against ethnic cleansings. I'm against violence, et cetera. I just don't know that I'm the guy to give any kind of particular hot take because I'm not as well versed in the history of the area. I'm not following it as closely as people who specialize in that.
That's fair, David. Honestly, I didn't have another question ready, so I asked you that again. But thanks for taking my call. I've been listening to your show for about like 4 or 5 years now.
I appreciate that.
Thanks, David. Take care. Maybe I'll have another question lined up next.
We have so many people lined up. It's not going to be any issue whatsoever. Why don't we go next to James from Pennsylvania? James, welcome to the David Pakman Show. What's on your mind today? And James, you've muted yourself. If you unmute yourself, I'll be able to hear you. And James, last chance. You've self-muted. There you are.
Hey, David, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hey, David. Thank you for letting me speak. I was wondering, so you see how Americans, like 60% live paycheck to paycheck, medical debt is skyrocketing. People don't want to take like ambulances, college tuition skyrocketing, housing prices, and wages have kind of stayed the same. So what do you think that we could like look at like a different system? Or what would you think, like more social programs to try to ease the burden on families? Because as of right now, as we see that the top 1% has more wealth than like 170 million Americans.
Yeah. So when you say try a different system, what do you mean?
Well, I wouldn't say like maybe, like, let me rephrase that. And I mean, I'm not talking like capitalism, socialism. I'm just mean like social democrat or democracy, whatever. It's more like more social programs.
So a couple different things here. You know, first and foremost, wages have been increasing. And in fact, we've seen some of the fastest wage increases in decades over the last few years. Where you're right is inflation has also been high. And so inflation has exceeded wage increases. That's true. But I think we want to be accurate. And we have actually seen some of the more notable wage increases. A couple different things I think are going on here. Where I think the U.S. is not doing enough is in the allocation of tax revenue in the most economically stimulative way. And so it won't come as a shock to people in my audience that we do need to use tax revenue, I believe, less so for defense spending. And by that, I don't mean like the tiny sliver of it that we give to Ukraine. I'm talking about the broader military industrial complex, the fact that we have 40 bases in Germany and so on and so forth. Much of that money, without taxing anybody anything more, much of that money could be reallocated in more economically stimulative ways. Food stamps, for example, which have been expanded under Joe Biden, which I think is great. Food stamps are insanely economically stimulative. Every dollar put into food stamps has a very high economic multiplier relative to some of these other forms of government spending or spending altogether. So I would like to increase some of those programs. I do believe there are areas altogether of society that should be taken out of the market system. I've said healthcare is one of those. Healthcare demand is completely inelastic. You're James, I'm guessing right now you don't have appendicitis. Is that right?
Nope.
How much would you be willing to pay for an appendectomy right now?
I don't have, honestly, I guess the most I can just maybe like $200.
No, but why would you pay? Why would you pay anything? You don't need an appendectomy. Why would you pay anything? Now, if all of a sudden you got appendicitis, how much would you be willing to pay to get the appendectomy?
I can't afford much, so very little.
But whatever it would take in order to save your life, is that generally the point here? This is going very wrong, James. But the point here is it's not like something like, you know, a sports car. If it's cheap enough, you might want one. Your interest in it goes up. But if it's too expensive, you're not so interested in it. With an appendectomy, until you need it, your demand is zero. You're not willing to pay anything. Why would you pay for a procedure you don't need? And then all of a sudden you need it to save your life and that changes. So the point here is there are certain areas of the economy like healthcare, which I think need to be removed altogether from a market system. And so it's not a different system altogether, but it is a model that exists in Scandinavia and in Northern Europe. That's the direction I'd like to go in.
Can I ask you one quick follow-up?
Sure.
So we saw that, you know, I told you like the top 1% owns more wealth than 170 million Americans.
Yes.
I'm not saying like try to seize wealth, but would you be interested in like possibly like a wealth tax? Because I heard it could bring in maybe like 2.4 trillion over like 10 years.
As I've said before, I think the wealth tax is problematic logistically and legally. I don't have any moral opposition to it. I just think there are practical issues with it. In terms of what if people have to sell stock or like art in order to pay it? I don't know how you force people to do that. I don't know how you quantify the value of some of these things. Are you getting so I think that there's logistical problems. It doesn't really seem to me like legally it's going to fly. So I would look at other things. I think we need to tax dividends as income. I've said that before. I outlined an entire plan, but I have no problem with a wealth tax. I see it as difficult to implement.
All right. Thank you for letting me speak.
All right. James from Pennsylvania. Excellent to hear from you. We're going to take just like the quickest of breaks and then we'll go right back to the phones and hear from more people. So hang on. Let's go back to Discord and hear from a few more people. You can find our Discord at davidpakman.com/Discord. Let's go to Santo from Louisiana, who's also a member at joinpacman.com. Really appreciate that, Santo. Welcome to the program. What's going on today?
Hello. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
I just joined, actually, the other day. I've been
listening to you
since about 2020. And I thought it was, you know, now that I got a full-time job, I thought it was finally time for me to...
Thank you so much. I really appreciate
that. In.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's been great listening to you. So I wanted to talk to you today about, I'm sure that you've heard about the death of Doug Larson, the senator.
No, Doug Larson, I have not.
Okay, yes.
Oh,
so
North
yesterday,
Dakota senator killed in Utah plane crash. I didn't. Oh, a state senator. I did not hear about that.
Yes, that happened yesterday.
Okay.
So I'm surprised that you didn't hear about it, as this was a state senator, right?
Well, I mean, I think that's why I didn't hear about it. There are so many state senators in the country, and I just, you know, I'm not up to date, so to speak, on North Dakota state senators, but I see articles about it here.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I guess it is a lot smaller, but I mean, it's still kind of a tragedy, and it is still,
it's always a tragedy. Absolutely.
I mean, it's definitely, yeah, absolutely. But it's not necessarily consequential to like the processes of the state, because they're probably going to just elect somebody very similar in politics to him in that regard. But still, I hardly saw it on any feeds. My wife told me about it, and she's not nearly as in tune to politics as I am. So I was just wondering why it wasn't as big of a deal. It just seemed like a bigger deal to me whenever I heard about it from my wife than it actually appeared to be on the media.
Well, I think my view on that would be, obviously, all of these deaths are tragedies. From what I'm reading, it happened in a small plane, and small planes compared to commercial aviation are significantly more dangerous. And it also, I mean, I'm not saying this guy is a nobody, but there's so many state senators in the United States in sum total. It seems from what I'm looking at, like it got roughly the amount of media attention we would expect, which is there are some articles about it. It wasn't like major national news.
All right. I guess that makes sense. I don't know. I thought that it would hit, you know, national news level just because, you know.
Well, I see an Associated Press article.
Yes, but, they do have the Associated Press. I did read that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah, I guess I don't really have much more to say on that. Maybe I'll talk to you again some other time.
All right, Santo from Louisiana, great to hear from you. Why don't we go next to Matt from Philly? Matt, welcome to the David Pakman Show. What's going on today?
Hey, David, how's it going?
Going well.
Fellow secular Jew here.
Welcome.
So I was watching your coverage of the debates for the GOP primary.
Yep.
A lot of them were bringing up fentanyl and how that is, you know, such a crisis. There's so many people dying, and
yep,
how that's making, I guess, the border one of the most important things that they're running on. Is there any kind of hypocrisy here? Because I feel like these are the same people who maybe attacked George Floyd because he possibly overdosed on fentanyl, or they're attacking Hunter Biden because he has a drug addiction. Is this actually something they really care about, or?
Of course not. Here's the deal with this. This is all about what's politically convenient right now. So on the one hand, the argument about the border is the problem and Biden because of fentanyl and so on and so forth is framing those who overdose as victims, because that's the convenient story in that context. The poor victims of Chinese fentanyl coming over the U.S.-Mexico border. On the other hand, when it comes to something like George Floyd or other individuals who they want to portray as perpetrators, all of a sudden they aren't victims of drug abuse if that's the story that is inconvenient to them. We saw this. We're seeing this with electric vehicles, right? When it comes to the mining and refining of oil, for decades, they're not concerned about the environmental impact because we've got to support the economy and we need oil and all these different things. They're not concerned about the fact that kids and women and so many people die over wars for fossil fuels, and they're not concerned. They say, we've got to go to those wars. We've got to secure our natural resources. So whatever. And then now all of a sudden it's, oh, we care about kids in the Congo because of cobalt, and we care about the shipping of the batteries around, or whatever the case may be. There are no principles here that are bigger than whatever is convenient at the time. That's the principle.
Yeah, I agree. If you don't mind, one more quick question.
Sure.
If you had to choose, would you prefer a bagel or a Bialy?
I'm partial to the bagels in general, because I think that they are better in the sort of applications I tend to favor. I don't know if people do it. Like, do you cut a bialy in half and put smoked salmon and cream cheese on it? I guess you could. It's not something I've seen frequently. So for my preferred sandwich applications, the bagel works better.
All right. I tend to usually prefer a bialy, but I guess we'll disagree there.
All right. Matt from Philly, thank you very much.
Great talking to you.
All right. Matt from Philly. What a day. What a day. Let's go to Dima from Brooklyn. Dima from Brooklyn, welcome to the David Pakman Show.
Hello, David. Thank you for having me.
Pleasure.
I wanted to ask you, I was a bit curious, how far do you think, or rather, how long do you think the United States will keep supporting, you know, the current government in Ukraine?
I think the answer to that depends on who wins in November of 2024. To me, it seems as though if Joe Biden wins, there is an appetite to continue supporting Ukraine. There's an argument that it's a, quote, great deal, that without troops on the ground, with a very small sliver of the total military or defense budget, Ukraine has been able to hold back Russia and create serious problems for Russia in what was thought to maybe be a very easy win for them. And so I think with that paradigm in mind, if Biden wins, the appetite will remain. If Trump wins, it seems that it may be far more short-lived. And I mean, Trump says he'll solve it in 24 hours. I doubt he will. But regardless, it seems that if Republicans are relatively in control and Trump wins, or whoever the Republican is that is the nominee wins, that the support for Ukraine may be stopped relatively quickly, but maybe not.
All right. Well, I appreciate your insight. Thank you.
My pleasure. All right. Dima from Brooklyn. Great to hear from you. Let's go next to Matt from Yorkshire. Matt, welcome to the David Pakman Show. What's on your mind today?
Afternoon, David. How are we?
We're doing well.
Doing good. Now, I apologize if this has already been covered. I did join in a little bit late. The speaker being ousted last night, I've just come across a tweet from Midas Touch touting some of the runners and the riders on there. I was just wondering what your thoughts might be
in terms of who will be the next speaker. You're saying,
yeah. Well, the Midas Touch tweet excretion, whatever they call them these days, throws up conspiracy theorist Nancy Mace, Steve Scalise, who's calling himself David Duke without the baggage, Jim Jordan, who we all know what he's been like, and of course the giant orange menace himself. I just thought who gets the nod, do you reckon?
Listen, at this point, predicting what this Republican Party is going to do seems like maybe the most fraught exercise we could possibly partake in. These people are nuts, okay? Yeah. Now, I do think it's very unlikely that they will make Trump the speaker. It doesn't seem plausible to me. I may end up eating my hat, but it just does not seem plausible to me. I don't think it's going to be Nancy Mace or Jim Jordan. It seems to me that they're the most likely, if we just say, like, what would be the least controversial way to approach this? It would be that Republicans find some kind of consensus moderate of sorts. And I don't know exactly who that is in the House, but that it would be someone maybe even relatively unknown to us. It's a very difficult thing to predict what crazy people will do.
Yeah, it's the crazy people that hold the power, from what I can see.
Yeah, to some degree.
Because you've got the idiots like Gates, Taylor Greene, Boebert, who are... Well, they exercised the power that they had over the last one. So
yeah, very much so.
Yeah,
very much so. So listen, we'll see. I don't know how long it's going to take, but at some point, I my instinct is we'll all be sort of surprised by the answer.
Do you foresee several rounds of voting in a couple more days of the process like we had last
probably,
time?
Probably.
Thanks for your time, David.
All right. Matt from Yorkshire, great to hear from you. Very much appreciate the call. Let's go to Lily from Germany, who is also a member at joinpacman.com. Lily, welcome to the program.
Hi, David. Very nice to talk to you.
Likewise.
I was wondering how you're selecting your topics for your show. Is it out of your interest for anything, or what most people are going to pay for something, or is it how you can influence a special topic to change something maybe?
The topic choice is basically four different considerations. It's number one, what am I interested in talking about on a particular day? Number two, what is the audience likely to be interested in? Number three, is this relevant in some way to what is happening in the world today? And number four, do I have something to say about it? If the answer is no to any of those questions, usually it doesn't make it onto the show.
Makes a lot of sense. And if I could, well, I would very welcome. I'm a little nervous. I'm sorry.
You're doing great, Lily. This is amazing.
And if you could talk a little bit more about climate change, because whenever you talk about any of your subjects, I learned so much already. And I think you have, well, a lot of influence over people, and maybe one day it would help.
Listen. Yes. I am glad to continue talking about climate change. One of the difficulties about it, Lily, is we've said so much of what there is to say. We know so much of what it is we need to do. And yet, until we actually get some consensus from some of the crazy people in the United States that it's time to do something rather than nothing, it's very difficult to make any headway. And so it's sort of like, I will keep repeating, of course, what is the reality. But sometimes you get stuck and there's no movement because of the Republican Party.
That's so true.
Sad situation.
Thank you very much. Yes, it is. In Germany as well. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me.
All right. Lily from Germany, thank you so much for the call. Why don't we go to Ryan from Auburn, New York? Ryan from Auburn, New York, welcome to the program.
Hey, David, good to speak with you again. How are you?
Likewise, I'm doing well.
Hey, I wanted to talk again about AI. I know that's what we talked about last time, but it just seems to be changing so rapidly and the ideas of what could be happening. So my first question is, what is your biggest concern with AI moving forward?
I mean, listen, I don't, there are people who, when you ask them this question, they will cite something super micro. I am not an expert in AI. So my macro concern is that it ends up doing more harm than the good that it brings, and that the harms are unpredictable and catch us off guard. That's like, you know, there will be people who will get very micro and say, well, no, the specific harm is that it'll find a way to kill us or some. Listen, I don't know. I'm not an expert in AI. My concern generally is we see many of the good things about it. The concern is the bad things will outweigh it and outweigh the good things dramatically and outweigh them in unpredictable ways.
Right. Yeah. And I heard recently someone describe the 2024 election being the last human election, because at the rate that it's going now, there will be more AI generated content, both images and written,
yes,
by 2028. I mean, I know it's kind of fraught to predict things, but I mean, if you had to guess, I mean, what is it even going to look like to be consuming information online,
right,
in just several years from now?
I don't have a prediction that is specific, but it seems to me that the cycle tends to be new technology presents a new challenge for knowing what is authentic, right? Like propaganda news articles presented a new challenge. And then so we needed to build some way to figure out what is real and what is fake news or whatever. So basically the process will be the deep fakes and the voice cloning and all this sort of stuff creates a new difficulty. And then there will be a second wave cycle in which we figure out technologies or systems to try to mitigate the ability of those technologies to trick people. And then it'll sort of all start over again with the next technology. That's the way it's gone in the past. Now, there are some who will say the current AI technology is so different that it's not going to be quite so simple. And we'll have to take that head on when we get to that. But beyond that, it's very hard to predict.
Yeah, and I hear that being said as a response. the concern is they're already using AI, like they use two AIs in tandem, one to create something and then the other one to check to see if it can find the fake. So it's, yes, sort of the self improving system. So, and the amount, the volume of content being put out is going to mean that, you know, like I saw, I'm part of a Facebook group that puts out, you know, fake images and I just follow it and watch it. And they've already gotten onto Snopes.com. And the idea being, you know, someone's going to have to debunk all of these images and the volume of images and the ease of creating them.
Yeah.
It just seems like it's mind-boggling.
Absolutely mind-boggling. And it's going to be this circular, cyclical thing that you describe exactly, Ryan. I'm as horrified and curious as you are about seeing where it goes.
All right. Well, that's all I had to talk about today. I really appreciate your thoughts.
All right. Thanks, Ryan. Ryan from Auburn, New York. That'll do it for calls today. We'll take a quick break and then be back with so much more. It's time for Friday feedback, emails, Twitter responses, Facebook comments, YouTube comments, etc. We'll often make it into Friday feedback where I give you a sampling of the sorts of responses I've received to show content. The first one we start with today is an email from a guy named Paul. I am going to warn you, it contains very strong language and it is a very serious case of MAGA brain worms. Paul wrote in saying, "You're a effing moron. Davey Trump built," oh, by the way, this is in all caps, in all caps. "Davey Trump built 450 miles of the border wall. All you do is repeat the demo rats, commie, woke, fake news, talking points, a-hole. Stop your gotcha BS and stop lying. Your guests always make you look like what you are, a effing lying moron. It says a lot about imbeciles that supported a perverted pedophile that has the intellect of a fly. S-head scum like yourself." I'm cleaning this up for the FCC. "Helped rig the 2020 election. Stop lying about it, you pile of S, a-hole. I worked at the Arizona polls. Stop lying. We were kicked out at 9 p.m. Then the count was changed." Well, didn't they continue to count ballots? That makes sense. "I watched numerous postal trucks arrive at all hours of the night delivering fake ballots." How would you know they were fake? "Piles of S like yourself are destroying the country. Please do humanity a favor and drink Drano." If this upsets you, vote. If this upsets you, the best thing that we can all do is cancel out this clown's ballot. And I don't mean cancel it out by not count it. I mean cancel it out by vote all of us in every election we can vote in such that his vote is irrelevant. That is my suggestion. There's very little to say. I mean, this is really serious brainworms, really, really serious brainworms. And, you know, mental health professional would be the appropriate next stop for this person. OK, let's just leave it there. But the way to counteract these people is by going out and voting ourselves. Here's someone, I guess, from the left, who says I'm causing a problem because I recognize that Biden is running for re-election or something. User Sinker from Reddit says, "How much longer is David going to ignore the Biden polls? LOL. Time for a new candidate. David equals shill. Biden's now losing in almost 70% of the polls, 37% approval, 77% thinks he's too old, 66% of Democrats don't want him running. 21% approval among youth voters, down 8 points with black voters, independents leaving in droves. Many of these things are untrue. If this guy isn't pulled, we're effed. Whitmer or Newsom mops the floor. We're going to risk our democracy on some selfish 80-year-old who doesn't even know how bad he looks. Guy can barely function. He walked off the stage in the middle of a Purple Heart ceremony, and you could just see the spaciness in his dead eyes. This is a Titanic, Hillary 2.0. You know, I've spoken about this so many times at this point that I don't know that there's anything else to say. The idea that I'm shilling for Biden, shilling what? He's running for re-election. And to me, it seems like it would look really bad to pull Biden. I just call me crazy. It seems like that would attract bad, negative attention. Would I rather someone else? Yeah. Have I been saying for a while it's time to pass the torch to the next generation of leaders? Yes. I just don't know that it's so obviously a disaster for Biden to have a rematch against the guy he defeated last time, because I don't know in which states Trump has made any gains since 2020. And it seems that saying we're kicking Biden out and picking someone else would potentially do much more damage than whatever benefit this individual thinks it would bring. It's just an opinion. There's no reason to call people shills. There's no reason to do any of it. Chris Brown says some people just don't believe in your climate change theory. Well, it's not my climate change theory. I think this is an important thing. There's this reaction narrative to the things I say that I'm just making these things up. I'm coming up with these things. It's not about my theory. We have the best scientists on the planet looking at the best data we have, and they've come up with our current understanding of what is happening. Is it conceivably possible that they're all wrong and the 0.02% of scientists who question elements of the understood climate change theory are the ones that are right? Yes, it is theoretically possible. Is that likely? It is not likely. So none of this is about me. And so many of the viewers that write in make it about me as if I'm coming up with this stuff. I'm not coming up with it. People that know more about this than me and presumably you are doing decades of research. And their understanding is that industrialization and human activities on Earth are causing unprecedented changes in the climate, and that there are things that could be done and arguably should be done to deal with that. It's not me. It's not about me. User MQ8QP says, so y'all Democrats hate Republicans for believing in Jesus. Very wrong. As I've pointed out before, there's no problem with people holding whatever religious beliefs they want to hold, as long as they recognize that their religious beliefs should not play a role in determining civil law and in influencing government. If one religion thinks abortion is murder and another religion thinks abortion is necessary in order to prioritize women's autonomy, then which religion do you pick to say this is how the law should be determined? No. Separation of church and state dictates that no religion is prioritized over another. No religion is established in civil government. And non-religion also does not get relegated to a secondary status, period. So I don't really know of Democrats that have a problem with anybody believing in Jesus. Believe whatever you want. It's a private matter. Just don't use your arbitrary so-called sacred beliefs or texts onto civil government where it has no business being. This is sort of funny. DSC dude says they can never decide if he's Sleepy Joe in the basement somewhere or if he's the smartest crime boss ever. Yeah, there is an obvious conflict between Biden doesn't know where he is. He doesn't know when it is. He doesn't know that he's president. He doesn't remember anything. And he is essentially a demented invalid. Okay. And he has organized a multi-decade criminal conspiracy for the enrichment of himself and his family and has done such a great job that there's no evidence that we can find. Which is it? Which is it? Please let me know. Lane Claypool, weighing in about Russell Brand, says just maybe they want to shut up Russell. They want to shut Russell Brand up. Could you believe that may be possible? Yeah, this is the argument that Russell Brand made, which is he has so much influence all of a sudden, and he's causing people to rethink the pandemic, and he's causing people to rethink Russia's invasion of Ukraine, and he's causing people to rethink vaccines, that they, I don't know who, the establishment, the corporate media, Democrats, I don't know, the globalists, they want to shut up Russell Brand because he just has too much influence. The reason I struggle to believe that's why these multiple allegations of sexual assault against him, including evidence like his own texts asking for forgiveness, it's hard to believe that that's all been concocted right now because his influence is so great when he has a YouTube channel that's 35% smaller than mine. It's just very difficult to believe. Would anybody believe it if there were five people accusing me of sexual assault and I had texts on my phone where I'm saying, please, I'm so sorry for what I did. And I said, they're coming after me because my influence is so big. Would any of you believe that? It's very hard. Very, I hope not. I hope that none of you would believe that. That's why we're skeptical. And here's a Facebook message. This guy wrote in and said, you are insane. You were part of the propaganda. You were part of the problem of this America. I don't know what you think you're getting out of this. I have no idea, but you need help. You are a socialist. You are destroying America. As far as America goes, wake up, America. This guy is a nut. No punctuation. And then followed up with, we need a savvy businessman in charge of this country like we need Trump so bad. You have no idea. I don't understand your ideology. You must not have any idea how business is run. I have businessmen get to be successful. You just run your mouth over and over. Propaganda, you Nazi. I'm not a Nazi. I'm Jewish. OK, I'm going to leave it at that. Think of maybe using a period or a comma, maybe a semicolon, even a double dash. Just consider it. OK, consider it. That's all I'm saying. If you have something you want to say to me, hopefully on the more coherent end of what we looked at today, email info@davidpakman.com or leave a comment on any of our many social platforms. We have a fantastic bonus show coming up. Remember that you can get today's membership rates before they go up. When the new website launches, membership rates are going up. You can lock in today's membership rates for as long as you want at joinpacman.com. You can even get a discount by using the code 4 years for indictments. Members get an extra show every weekday. Get the full experience. The continuing tragic saga, in a sense, that is Rudy Giuliani's complete implosion of his political and professional career continues. Rudy Giuliani is now suing President Joe Biden for calling him a Russian pawn. There's a CNN report about this. Former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani filed a defamation lawsuit against Biden for calling him a Russian pawn. During a presidential debate nearly 3 years ago, Giuliani announced the lawsuit at a rambling press conference outside a courthouse in New Hampshire, where he filed in order to take advantage of the state's defamation laws. He reiterated several attacks against Biden and his son Hunter, though he's only suing Joe Biden, despite the high bar for statements by public figures in a political setting to be found defamatory. So calling this a rambling press conference is an understatement. Understand that even conceptually, as we've talked about before, when you're talking about defamation, generally, it can be different depending on the state. But generally, you need to demonstrate a number of elements. One, that the statements that were made were untrue. Two, that they were made in a public setting and communicated to a third party. And three, that they actually damaged your reputation or career or life materially. It's very difficult to imagine that Joe Biden's comments about Rudy 3 years ago could be demonstrated to have materially harmed Rudy, particularly when he did so many things to harm himself. But regardless, here's Rudy Giuliani, sort of confused, you know, explaining, I guess, what he's doing.
Thank you, Lou. Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Bill, very, very much. He's our counsel in the state of New Hampshire. And Lou is my counsel overall, because there are going to be a lot of implications from this case. As you can tell, it has a great deal of room for expansion, because a lot of people helped Joe Biden with this terrible lie that he told. Joe Biden has spent his life telling lies, getting away with it. Now he gets away with it because you let him get away with it. You foisted it on us, I mean the press. An American president who is a pathological liar. That has implications for national security. As a result of Joe Biden's lies, people have died.
I don't know what he's talking about there.
Would there be a war in Ukraine if Donald Trump were president? Absolutely.
By the way, what this has to do with defamatory alleged statements against Rudy, obviously we're already off track.
Putin invaded Ukraine and Georgia three times. One time with Biden, one time with Obama, one time with Bush. Only time he didn't, Trump was the president. Afghanistan. So in some ways, the damage done to me is less severe. He didn't get me killed, although I have been death threats.
Right.
His lies cost me a good deal of my law practice.
Now, remember, what caused this is, you know, they claim to be the party of personal responsibility. What cost Rudy? That's actually not bad. He did loot. What cost Rudy much of his law practice was that he pursued obviously ridiculous claims about the 2020 election in court, associated himself with people like Sidney Powell and Jenna Ellis, humiliated himself in an incredible manner day after day after day. That's why he lost a bunch of the law practice, not because of Joe Biden and whatever Biden said in a debate years ago.
It cost me directly a good deal of my million person audience on Common Sense, where I was cut off by YouTube, which operates as a co-conspirator in another conspiracy of Biden's.
All right. So this is 16 minutes long. As you can see, this is only even tangentially related to the claims of defamation. The one other interesting moment I did want to zoom in on is Rudy Giuliani angrily denies his alcoholism here. And
before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
This is Israel's 9/11, and Israel will do everything to bring our sons and daughters back home. There is no reconciling with genocidal terrorists. Israel will exact a heavy price on Hamas so that what we witnessed will never repeat itself.
Israel's ordered a complete siege of Gaza after fighters from Hamas broke out of the blockaded Gaza Strip Saturday to carry out an unprecedented attack by air, land, and sea on Israel. Over the past 3 days, at least 1,300 people have died, including over 800 inside Israel and over 500 in Gaza.
Israel expects and demands political and military support while advancing goals that are fundamentally at odds with international legitimacy and consensus. Its policies are an assault on our humanity, on international law, on peace, and are a threat for its own people.
We'll go to Israel and Gaza for the latest. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The death toll across Israel and Gaza has topped 1,300 as the bloody conflict stretches into its third day. Israel today announced a total blockade on Gaza, including food, water, electricity, and fuel. On Sunday, Israel declared war on Hamas after Hamas fighters launched a surprise coordinated attack on Israel Saturday. Among the targets was a music festival where Hamas gunmen killed some 260, mainly young people. Israel responded by pounding the Gaza Strip with airstrikes, which hit housing blocks, tunnels, and a mosque. Over 800 people have been killed in Israel, over 500 in Gaza. Thousands more have been injured on both sides of the separation barrier. Hamas says it's taken over 100 hostages, including civilians and Israeli army officers. Israeli Prime Minister has told Gazans to leave, though it's unclear where they'd be able to go, vowing to all but decimate the besieged territory.
All of the places where Hamas are deployed, hiding and operating in, that wicked city, we will turn it into an island of ruins. I am telling Gaza's people to leave those places now because we will take action everywhere.
Over 120,000 people in Gaza have already been displaced from the Israeli attacks. 65-year-old Sabah Abu Hilal, who lost his home in an airstrike, says he refused to be uprooted.
I am not the only one left out on the street. There are 17 other families in this area made homeless following this barbaric strike, which killed around 17 or 18 people. Several families are on the street and left without refuge. This is not the first displacement, and it's as if they are displacing the Palestinian people every now and then on purpose. There was the 1948 migration, and it was followed by similar waves of people leaving the country. Our children are also migrating, and now they are destroying homes over the heads of residents while they sleep, without any warning or reason, with the aim to displace and destroy and to uproot them from this land. However, we refuse to be uprooted. We have firm roots in this land.
The U.S. said it'll send more military aid and munitions to Israel, already the largest annual recipient of U.S. military funding. It'll also bring military ships and aircraft closer to Israel. The U.N. Special Rapporteur on the occupied Palestinian territories blasted what she called the selective outrage of many Western nations following the conflict's outbreak as they